Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network.
Golf Talk Live is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. Here's Andrew to tell you more about our sponsors.
iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine, including reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, all designed to help you improve from tee to green. Welcome to Golf Talk Live with your host, Ted Odorico. Join Ted each week as he speaks with some of the best in golf. This week's special guest will join us a bit later. But first up is another great discussion on Coach's Corner. So let's introduce tonight's Coach's Corner panel.
All right. Good evening, everybody. And once again, welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico. Want to first off welcome everybody back. We've had a little bit of some technical issues over the last few weeks, so my apologies to the listeners, and thank you for coming back and tuning into the program. Hopefully all of the glitches have been worked out, and moving forward, we won't have any further issues. So again, my apologies for that. We've got a great show for you tonight. We're going to be starting off with Coach's Corner here in just a moment. I'll introduce tonight's crew. And then, of course, this is our travel, special travel segment week. So I have a couple of great guests from Golf Breaks by PGA Tour going to be joining me here in a little bit. And then my featured guest, special guest tonight is John Dioulas, the president of GolfTrainingAids.com. He'll be joining me on the second half of the show. But let me introduce the guys on the panel, and we'll get into tonight's Coach's Corner discussion. All right, a motley crew, if you will. John Hughes, PGA Master Professional and honorary president of the North Florida PGA section, and he was the recipient of the 2013 PGA of America's Professional Development Award. He's a senior contributor and Golf Tips Magazine Top 25 instructor, and was also the 2023 North Florida PGA's Teacher and Coach of the Year. Also joining out the other part of the crew is Jim Endicott, and he's been teaching this great game for over 38 years. He's a former Golf Digest School's general manager and a seven-time PGA Award winner, including the 2022 North Florida PGA Section Patriot Award and two North Florida PGA Youth Development Awards. He was previously the director of instruction at Royal St. Cloud Golf Links in Florida. Two is also a Golf Tips Top 25 instructor and contributor. So, guys, welcome back to Coach's Corner.
Thanks, Ted. Thank you, Ted. It's great to be here.
All right. I appreciate it. All right. So we're going to talk about a couple of things. This is actually, I'm going to be pulling this out of two chapters. As I've mentioned on previous shows, I've actually put together a number of golf books that have not been officially released, but I thought some of the snippets that I'm going to pull out would make for some interesting discussion. So the chapters I'm going to be coming to are from the Complete Guide to Golf Strategies and Fundamentals. I'm going to be focusing on chapters 4 and chapters 5. So perfecting your short game is 4, and then I'm going to be talking a little bit about course management and strategy in chapter 5. So John, I'm going to come to you first on this. I think we all try our best to really try to perfect our short game, because that's really where I would say 60% of the strokes are either lost or incurred at that point and in that part of the game. And so first off, just talk about just a little bit what we sort of classify some of the components of the short game. And then I want to get you to specifically talk about chipping, some of the fundamentals of chipping, some common mistakes that you have come across, and if you have a drill or two that you want to throw out there that might be able to help some of the listeners out there. So just kind of give us a quick overview of what would be sort of classified in the short game area, and then just talk about chipping a little bit, some of the fundamentals and some of the mistakes and drills that you have used over the years.
Sure. Thanks, first off, Ted, for the opportunity. As always, Jim, always a pleasure to be on the show with you. And looking forward to seeing you here in a month or so. The basic definition of me of short game is anything inside for the really good player, 120 yards, and for the not-so-good player, maybe inside of 100. And you can break it down into three, maybe four different categories. Obviously, greenside bunkers, pitching, chipping, as you said, and putting. When you do the math at any level, at the highest levels in the world, all the way to the very beginner, about a third to a half of your strokes are made up with short game. And the two big mistakes that I see people make with short game is not practicing it enough, not valuing it enough, and realizing that you can lower your scores fastest by just getting a better short game. The other big thing that I see with short game, that particularly with chipping and putting, is an excessive amount of weight shift. Realize that short game is short shots. Weight shift has more to do with hitting it long, trying to create momentum and speed so the ball can travel far. When you are anchored and or misanchored when you're hitting a short game shot, you basically make your swing bottom inconsistent. And that's why it's the weight shift. It's not necessarily the swing bottom that I see and have to help out a lot of people with, particularly ones, say, from a 12 handicap and up. Even at a 12 or 10 handicap, there could be a little bit of weight shift, a little bit of imbalance, and that can throw the game off. As far as chipping goes, I've been very vocal about this on the record, both on my YouTube channel as well as within the magazines that I write for, that it's your go-to shot. It's the absolute basis of ball striking. I recently did a school where a client basically looked at me and the other people that I had helping me in the eye and said, you know what, this is the ticket to my ball striking. And we, all of our jaws dropped. It was that wow factor, that much of a significant turn for this person, that once they understood the technical aspects of chipping, it was no holes barred for this guy. And as far as the basic setup, doesn't matter what club you use. If the ball's in the middle of your stance, you're slightly open with the preponderance of your weight on your front foot, and you're just trying to choke down on the club and make a big putting stroke, that's the essence of chipping. That's the essence of ball striking. It places the handle in front of the head, club head, and allows you to de-loft the club to compress the ball a little bit. The real key is you're trying to hit through the ball, not at it. And with that weight forward, talking about that weight shift again, anchoring it forward, you can't go wrong.
Let me ask you just a quick follow-up on that, because I see this, as I'm sure both of you do as well. You know, you talk about, you know, placing the ball essentially in the middle with an open, slightly open stance. And I think that's good to make good solid contact, and obviously having a little bit favor weight shift to the front foot. So obviously left foot for right-handed golfers, right for left-handed golfers. One of the things that I see, and maybe you do as well, is they tend to over exaggerate that movement, meaning that they get certainly their weight over the left side, but they're actually leaning their upper body quite a bit over to the left. And what I often see is that they kind of stab in behind the ball. So as they're making their stroke, they're kind of chunking it in behind, or they might compensate and move back on their back foot a little bit because they're getting too much of a weight shift. So how can you avoid that a little bit? Again, is it because they're getting too much body into it, or is it just they're not really understanding the setup correctly? What are your thoughts, John?
That's a great question. The way I basically solve this for people is, can you stand on one leg, your front leg, and just put the toe of your back leg in the ground? And that's, it's overdoing the weight, but what it does is, if you're from the upper body trying to lean forward, you can't. You'll fall right over. So by, it's called a stork drill or a flamingo drill. A lot of people call it a lot of different things, but just basically imagine your feet are together
and he took the back foot, in my case as a right-hander, the right foot, and just put it about 3 or 4 inches behind my left foot and put the toe in the ground, I'm going to have a preponderance of my weight forward, and it's going to prevent my upper body from leaning. But you mentioned that, hey, you could be chunking it, sculling it, you're over-exaggerating it. What most people do with this shot when they can't stabilize their weight is they'll make this massively big backswing and try to control the distance on the way down by controlling the speed of the club. By setting weight forward, you're automatically setting yourself up in an accelerated position. You just got to trust it and let it go. Your better mistake is to hit it past as a beginner versus chunking it or trying to lift it up in the air. Trust that this weight is forward. Trust that it's mainly from the lower body that's anchoring it and that your upper body is staying relatively still, relatively over the ball, and just allow the arms, the hands, the club to accelerate. You'll find that you'll make better mistakes, which is what this game's about, is just making better mistakes, more better mistakes than your competitor. You'll make the better mistake by accelerating, by having that weight forward.
Right, and I think when people learn and understand the proper techniques, it's amazing how much simpler the process is. And I think that's what really people don't, you know, really focus on the fundamentals as much. They see something and they try to exaggerate it, as I mentioned, and ultimately end up making a lot. And then they overcompensate in the opposite direction to make up for something that they didn't do correctly the first time around. So it's very important to do that. And again, your setup is everything, I think, with every shot. Jim, I'm going to get into this with you a little bit on pitching. Obviously with chipping, it's a little bit different scenario. We're trying to really chip the ball a short distance and let it kind of roll out, especially if we're around greenside. Pitching is a little bit different. We're going to hit it more in the air and hopefully stop a little bit shorter, may get some rollout depending on the shot. But again, it's more, the ball is more in the air. Talk about the fundamentals. How do we set up properly to execute good pitch shots? What are some common mistakes that you see, as John pointed out? And do you have a special drill or a favorite drill that you like to use in your teaching?
Well, thank you, Ted. Yes, in pitching, you know, we've now raised the trajectory of the shot. The ball's now going to get a bit more in the air. Maybe it's going to fly close to the same distance that it rolls, or it could fly more in the air and not roll as far on the ground, whereas chipping was just low, rolling most of its distance on the ground. And the setup for pitching is not too dissimilar from chipping in that we're going to have a slightly open stance with our feet. The ball's fairly in the center. But this time we're going to keep the normal loft on our club, and we're going to choose a club that has sufficient loft, pitching wedge, gap wedge, a 60-degree wedge, something of that nature. And in order to get the ball to go more in the air, the arms and the club are going to have to swing more into the air. As John talked about chipping, we're trying to keep it low. He mentioned once we got set up, we were essentially swinging it similar to our putting stroke where the club stayed fairly low to the ground, which helped to keep the ball low to the ground. In pitching, now we're going to have a little bit of body rotation, and the arms are going to swing up, and we'll have some wrist hinge so that the shaft starts to point towards the sky. How far does that swing back? That's going to be predicated on how far we want to hit the shot. But then in the downswing, different than what we did in chipping, we are going to need to have some more through swing and the club coming back up into the air, and it's going to require that the body rotate slightly towards the target. Hence, the little bit of an open stance helps with that. By keeping our weight centered in our setup, that helps us to keep the natural loft on the golf club at address and through the strike. So the difference between chipping and pitching is we've got to get more air, more flight to the golf ball. Hence, our arms have to go a little bit more up into the air. And in order to do that, we have to have a little bit of body rotation, both in the backswing and the through swing. We would change our distance by the size of those, the arm swing. If we needed to go further, maybe the arms would go where the lead arm is parallel to the ground in the backswing, and then the trail arm would be parallel to the ground in the through swing. If we needed to go further, that lead arm would go a little higher in the backswing, and, of course, a little higher in the through swing. Conversely, if I wanted to go shorter, I would have it go a little bit lower in the back and finish a little bit lower. Some faults I see is oftentimes people want to try and lift this ball into the air and not trust that the arms and the club swinging up and down, presenting the loft that's on the golf club, that in and of itself is going to put the ball in the air. And so they get in their mind that we have to assist this into the air, and so the upper body starts to lean away from the target, and the club starts to ascend as it's approaching the ball, and that's when we catch those shots where we hit a bit behind it, the fat one, the chunker, and or we hit that right in the middle of the ball in the equator with the bottom leading edge of the wedge, and we send it sailing across the green. And that's the intent of trying to lift it into the air. We need to allow the arms to swing up, the arms and the club to swing down to the ground as the body unwinds slightly, presenting the loft on the club, and that's what puts the ball into the air.
One of the things, well said, one of the things that and I'm just going to follow up with you, maybe you can give the listeners a drill to help with this. One of the things that I'm sure we all have seen many times, but is a deceleration. You pointed out where sometimes, maybe they'll take a little bit bigger or longer backswing and then sort of decelerate on the way down because they're afraid of hitting it too far. And I've seen conversely the other where they'll take a little short backswing and then over-accelerate going through, both sort of becoming an issue of not hitting solid contact or rushing the swing or putting on the brakes, if you will, in some cases. So it begs the question, this becomes more of working on developing a good rhythm. So what's something that for those that want to, increase, the likelihood of making good pitch shots, what's a good drill, Jim, in your estimation for helping with sort of getting their rhythm and timing in the shots, regardless of what the distance they're going? Is there something that you can think of that you have found to be successful?
Yes, there's a great drill in that we get set up in the same manner that I described, and in the grip with both hands, both left hand and right hand, we take our normal grip in terms of position and then take the index finger and pinky finger of hand off of the golf club. So now you're holding it with really your ring finger and middle finger and thumb of both hands. And for them to swing back and through with the thought of it being similar to a metronome. And so they would take swings back and through, much like a metronome, and then address the ball and go ahead and hit it with that same grip. And what this will do is it will sync up what the arms and the club are doing with what the body action is doing as well. It's very difficult to get disconnected or disjointed or out of sync or out of rhythm with the hands on there that way. It'll keep that club swinging up and down more in front of the body as the body's doing its job. So swinging it with that grip like a metronome in rehearsal, and then go ahead and hit some shots. And It may be beneficial as they start out this drill when they're hitting the golf ball to go ahead and stick the ball on a short tee. That'll gain some confidence that they'll get to the bottom of it and then work that tee down until they're back on the turf and hitting with that same grip.
Well said. Yeah. And I think it's important that, again, obviously, like anything, we have to, as John pointed out earlier on, is about really practicing all of these different things. And it's great to get out and play on the golf course and that. But when you have time and you're on the range, whether you're in a lesson or out of a lesson, this is the time when you want to be working on some of this and developing that rhythm and your timing and so forth, and making sure that you're doing the techniques properly and not waiting until you get out in the golf course and then start meddling with it and causing all kinds of other problems. John, I'm going to come back to you on this one. You already mentioned putting, so I'm not going to we're going to skip past that because we've talked about that many times. This is a shot I want you to talk about because this is something, you know, we see a lot of people, you know, wanting to smash their driver out there. It's about distance. And this is another shot that I see a lot of people, they see the pros hitting these lob shots all the time. They want to do the same thing, but they don't really understand that the technique and how to really set up properly for it. And a lot of times they end up blading or thinning out the shot again, chunking it behind. Obviously, a lot of it involves the setup. Is this a shot that you would encourage a higher handicap to kind of leave out of the bag for a while until they get a little bit more proficient overall? Or is it just something that everybody needs to work on, regardless of your handicap level? What are your thoughts on lob shots? We see the pros doing this all the time. It can be a tricky for a shot for a lot of people. What are your thoughts here? What are some common mistakes that you see? And what are some drills and setup techniques that you recommend?
It's a very lustful shot, the lob shot, and I've done a couple of videos about it with that particular title, because as much as a higher handicapper, the not-so-skilled, tries to do this, as you said, it's a lot of setup. But the other thing is acceleration and understanding where that acceleration takes place and what it's doing not only to the bounce of the club, which a lot of people don't think about, but what it's doing to the ball as well. They're more consumed about the ball going up in the air and forget about turf, ground, club interaction. So is this a shot for the higher handicapper? Definitely not. It's probably reserved for that single digit or better. But yet you can still hit a pitch shot very much like Jim described, just by opening up yourself, opening up the club. You can gain some height so long as you're swinging through the golf ball. You're accelerating through it. If you go to lift it, as Jim had said, you're probably going to scull it because that club's moving up. And that's the real key here, is to understand that this club, when hitting the ball, is actually hitting the ball and the turf simultaneously. It just so happens that the club is wide open as far as loft goes, not necessarily as far as aim and direction. And that's where people with higher handicaps, not so skilled, will see a ball go way off to the right or shanked by the right-hander. So the real key here is setting up with much more open a stance, much more open a club, and going ahead and taking a swing. Going ahead and understanding where that swing bottom is and allowing the loft of the club to put the ball lustfully in the air. You don't have to help it. It takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of guts to use it on the golf course. But if you're not practicing it and just think you can pull it off, you may pull it off once. That's an anomaly. Pulling it off twice, that's going to be hard to do.
Yeah, and well said. And, you know, I agree 100% with you. I'm in the same camp. I think for the higher handicap, and it's not something that you can at some point introduce them. I just see too many people. It's just like with the driver. You know, you see them on the range all the time. They're just trying to smash out the driver, get as much distance as possible. And it's great to have extra distance. But I also see them trying these, you know, flop shots, and they just don't have the technique, and they're just not very accomplished. And they end up spending most of their time, you know, hitting all kinds of funky shots doing that. And it's just a great way to, you know, increase your score. And I just think that until you get more proficient ball striking, in general, that's a shot that you need to, at least for the time being, leave out of the bag. I think there's a lot of other opportunities that you can still score. And when you feel more confident and that's something that you can, a shot that you can then work on a little bit more. Jim, this is something here, and this applies all the way, whether really all the game, not just the short game, but particularly with the short game, is our distance control. You talked about a little bit, you talked about obviously the distance going back and your follow through and that. But we see this so many times with a lot of golfers. One time they're hitting their 7-iron, 155 yards. Maybe the next time they're hitting it 160, then it's 145. It's all over the place. So they don't really have very good distance control. How do we help them? What are some techniques to help do that? What are some drills perhaps that can help golfers and particularly our listeners out there really dial in those distance controls?
And so I make sure I'm clear on the question. Distance control in the short game, but also in the long game as well?
You can certainly add the long. Obviously, we're focusing right now on the short game, but you certainly can, if you want to throw in some advice as well on the long game as well. But start with the short game.
Okay. Yes. In terms of distance control, and I'll kind of, if I can, run through it in terms of the different shots we've already talked about. And so if we're looking at chipping, there's a couple different schools of thought. There's a school of thought of taking a club and getting proficient with how you strike that ball with that club in a chipping technique, and then adjust the size of your golf swing to accommodate the distance we need to go. As we said with pitching, larger backswing, larger through swing, those can adjust that distance that way. I'm a fan of learning a technique, learning a stroke, and then changing the golf club. I personally will chip with the golf club anywhere from my 58-degree wedge up to about a 6-iron. And depending on how far that ball needs to roll is what determines which club I'm going to use. Now, how can we learn that? Much like we might do in putting, we could do a ladder drill where we start at a certain distance and we hit it onto the green and allow it to roll out, say, 10 feet. And then after we've gotten proficient at hitting it that distance, then hit it to where it rolls out 15 feet and get proficient at that, and then move on to 20 and so on until you're chipping it across the green. And that helps you to understand the force that you have to put on that you have in your hand. With pitching, I love to give a drill where we put different targets at different distances from us. And so maybe I have a shot that I'm hitting 20 yards, 30 yards, 40 yards. And so I'll hit shots to the 20-yard distance until I get proficient with it and get the feel that if I take it back this far and if I've thought about a clock, that I might be swinging the shaft of the club back to, say, 9 o'clock and then through to 3 o'clock, that may hit my ball 20 yards. And then if I go and I swing it back to 10 o'clock and through to 2 o'clock, that may go 30 yards. And then 11 and 1, that goes to 40 yards. And so I get the feeling by doing over and over repetitions to certain distances. Then I would mix it up and I would hit different shots to different distances, meaning I would hit some to 20 yards, then hit the next one to 30 yards, then hit the next ball to 40, then back to 20, and then out to 50, and so on and up to as far as I maybe am going to hit that wedge in a pitching technique, which how far is that? Something less than my full swing. And then the other way we can change distance is, as John was talking about with the lob shot, and we look at our skill level. Are we good enough to, one, play the lob shot? And if so, I can adjust the loft I'm presenting to the golf ball, meaning I can open the face and add additional loft to hit a shorter than normal shot. And so I could adjust the distance by how I might adjust the amount of loft I'm using on that particular club. One of my favorite drills to learn the execution of those three shots, the lob shot, the pitch shot, and the chip shot, is a drill I call the Seve drill. We all know that Seve Ballesteros grew up with a 3-iron, and he learned all his shots around the green with a 3-iron. And I love to take three balls of the golf ball the player plays golf with and set them in a situation by the green. Perhaps they're 5 steps off the green and the flag is 30 steps on the green or 30 feet onto the green. And then they hit a chip shot, they hit a pitch shot, and then they hit the lob technique to that flag. Then they go and pick the balls up and they move to another area. Now this time maybe they're 10 yards off the green and the flag is 20 feet on the green and hit the same routine, chip, pitch, and the lob shot. And then take that to one step further and they could incorporate their putting, and now they have to hit those three shots and putt them out. And so it's a great gamifying of the practice while honing in on their which shot is best for me and how do I control my distance with each one from given situations.
Well said, Jim. And I think it's important, and I would imagine you would agree with this, is I think you have to challenge yourself. And I like the examples that you just gave, because it causes the player to think about things a little bit more and kind of put it in perspective. And you know, Nicklaus famously talked about in Golf My Way how he had the same swing. It was just a matter of changing clubs depending on the shot he needed to hit. So he didn't try to invent, you know, 10 different swings. Obviously, the distances and how far back you would take the club and so forth, obviously, with certain adjustments had to be made. But essentially, he had the same swing for every shot and for every club. It was just a matter of the club obviously dictated the distance that the ball was going to flight. And, I like that. I think too many players try to finesse their different clubs, and they end up hitting a variety of different swings, if you will, and some are effective and others aren't. And I think it's just a matter of working. And I like the fact that you, sort of follow that Seve Ballesteros method of, you know, taking something like a 3-iron or something along that line and creating different shot scenarios for them to do. It causes them to think a little bit more and focuses on using a little bit of what is upstairs, if you will. And this falls into our next topic. John, we're going to move on to Chapter 5 that I talk about here, and that is strategies for course management. And I think most people understand what we mean by course management, so I'm not going to get you to do that and describe it specifically, but there's strategy versus execution in course management. And essentially what we're talking about here is two sides of the same coin. As an example, a well-thought-out strategy can certainly fall apart if the execution is poor, just as well as a well-executed shot can be rendered ineffective by a poor strategy. One of the things that we can do, and I always try to encourage people, is sort of assessing the golf course. So I like, for especially somebody that's never played a course before, is learning to read the scorecard and learning to understand the makeup of the course they're about to play. Maybe you could touch on that a little bit more, maybe helping them to read and understand the course layout a little bit better before they actually step on the first tee.
Sure. I'm always telling my competitive players to look at aerial maps, study scorecards, study course layout books, that kind of thing, to have a better understanding of what the golf course is about. Also understanding the architect, because each architect has their own little signature. So I'll give you an example. Jack Nicklaus will put a tree or a fairway bunker in the middle of a fairway, and it's his ode to Desmond Muirhead, who taught him a lot about golf course architecture. You can't go to a Nicklaus course anywhere in the world and not find at least one hole that way. So understanding who your architect is, what their variations are, what their trends and tendencies are is really good information. But then as you look at the scorecard, understanding which tee is best for your skill level is really critical. And I even say that to elite players initially, just because you're elite and you can play from 7,000 yards doesn't mean you play the golf course the first time from 7,000. Maybe you play it from 66 just to get a feel for it. If you've never played the golf course before, let's say you decide I'm going to play a Golf Week amateur event or a Grint Tour, and you don't have time to practice, looking at the course backwards is another way of understanding where your landing areas are, how the architect intended for you to play the golf course. Because a lot of times when you look backwards, the things you see from the tee box disappear. It's those things that disappear that were made to attract, to bring some fear into the game. So when you're understanding some architectural milestones or landmarks, when you understand your game, your tendencies as to ball flight, do you do it left to right or right to left is your predominant curvature, understanding all these things. I don't call it course management, Ted. I call it self-management. Because the more information that you can put into your brain to make a better decision, the less likely your mistakes are as costly. When you're just sort of a bull in a china shop, oh, I see the fairway, let me hit it, and you're not playing to your tendencies, you're not understanding that there could be something ahead that you can't see, that's always going to get you in trouble faster from a strategy standpoint of view than, say, an errant shot. And then if you're going to compound it with an errant shot, you know, just understanding where to put the ball, where's your next step, having that plan B. Most people don't even think of a plan B, a plan C, or a plan D. Trust me, the world's best always have that in mind. They are looking at every nook and cranny you can think of on the golf course and trying to understand that if their tendencies fail them, where's the next best place to keep par in play? And that's critical to their livelihood, but it's also critical to anybody's scoring ability, is to be able to understand the course and your tendencies, realize that with all the different technology and information that's out there, and just make great decisions. Where I have a phrase that if you make a great decision and set up to execute that decision, it's probably going to camouflage your poor performance at some point, if not immediately. And you've got to go on that to some way that lasts faith. If your execution isn't there, make great decisions on the information you have, set up for that, and most likely you'll score to your potential.
Again, well said. You know, there are so many, you know, things for people really to think about, you know, when playing golf. And obviously, you know, some may have different agendas. Obviously, you have to first ascertain why you're playing in the first place. Are you just out, you know, if you're just a recreational golfer and you just want to have fun occasionally with some friends and you're not as serious about improving, you know, then a lot of the things that we're talking about here on the show and particularly tonight may not be as applicable. But I've always found, as I know you guys have, if you want to have more enjoyment in the game, you have to put some effort into it. And the more effort that you put into the game, the more you're going to get out of it, the more reward you're going to get out of it, and the more fun ultimately you're going to have. And that's really what playing golf is. If you're not going to put anything into it, then you're really not going to enjoy it, and more than likely you're going to drift away and not play at some point down the road. So I always like to encourage people. And one of the things, Jim, I think to do that is to develop a game plan. And you want to, as an example, you want to plan your round with some goals that you're going to set, developing a specific game plan, maybe depending on the circumstances. And then there is the other factor is having to make adjustments along the way. John sort of alluded to a little bit there in the last segment, and that is adjusting as you go along. Talk about some of those things there. How do we plan effectively? How do we set ourselves up for success for that round of golf?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is we have to assess our skill level. where are we, what are we able to do, and to set aside our ego and go about planning what golf really is. Golf is a game where we move a ball a certain distance at a target, and then we do that again, and then we ultimately try to get it in the hole. And I think the critical thought there is we move our ball, we send it down the fairway, we send it a certain distance. And so if we step back and we look and we say, okay, if I stand on the tee and I hit my longest club I'm comfortable with, maybe that's a driver, maybe that's a three wood, maybe that's a hybrid. What's the probability it's going to be in the fairway? And I'd like to think that that should be a pretty high probability. And if so, if you're choosing a driver and you're going to hit it in the fairway in 18 holes, one out of 14 tries, well, we need to choose a different plan. And so we need to choose a plan that will put our ball in the fairway. And then from there, we have to choose, how do I put it in a better place than I am right now? And if my skill set is such that I can hit it on the green, that's certainly a better place. But if it's not, if I am 220 yards away, if I advanced at 110 yards and that took my 9 iron to do it, I now have 110 left. And being only 110 yards from the green is better than being 220 yards from the green. And so our game plan has to fit what our skill set says it can do. And a lot of times our minds say, oh, I've done this once in 1,000 tries, therefore I can do it again. No, what's the probability of doing it with frequency? And so we look and we say, okay, there's a fairway bunker, as John talked about with Nicklaus Design, and that fairway bunker is 200 yards away. Well, I hate fairway bunkers, so let me hit something that's going to come up short of that fairway bunker, or let me hit to an area far left of that fairway bunker. And so I map my strategy based on, can I hit a shot that maybe is on a scale of 1 to 10, around a 6 or a 7, and it's in good shape. And so I make my plan based on that. Because that 10 out of that number 10 shot, that best of the best, only happens very infrequently. So we have to do with what we know will happen with some regularity. And so mapping a plan, map it to our skill set, map it to our abilities, not our best abilities, but our abilities. And then if you need to have a target score, establish a target score, a personal par on each hole. And that personal par may be par. It may be double bogey. As a new golfer, I probably wouldn't even be doing that. And I would set my plan out to say, I want to see this many good shots, ones that I like. And if I can achieve that, then I met my plan. So we map our plan on the golf course based on our skill and choose our shot, not on that one that I did 5 years ago, but on that one that I likely can do now. And so we're moving our ball a certain distance at a target and choose that certain distance to be one you can achieve.
I don't think it could have been better said than what you just did. Thank you, Jim. What a great job.
Thank you.
As we get ready to wrap up this segment of Coach's Corner and I get ready to move on to my next segment, I want to take this opportunity to let the listeners know that these two guys, John Hughes and Jim Endicott, and yours truly, are going to be heading up to Macklemore. In fact, I believe John's already there. To Macklemore Resort in Georgia on June 7th to 9th for our second Golf Tips Magazine Golf School. It's going to be a great opportunity to work on your game, all of the things that we talked about tonight and more. It's a three-day school, and it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of great information. You definitely do not want to miss this opportunity. And if you're interested, we've got a few spots left. You need to reach out to me ASAP. My email address is editor@golftipsmag.com. That's editor@golftipsmag.com. You want to reach out to me ASAP and let me know that you're interested. I'll give you all of the details. So again, reach out to me at editor@golftipsmag.com as soon as possible so that I can get the information to you and we'll get you organized and ready to come out and join us in June. It's going to be a lot of fun. The beautiful golf course, I've seen it a couple of times. The resort is just breathtaking views. John, I'm sure, will tell you a little bit more, but we want to have that opportunity for you guys to come out and really dial in on all parts of your game and just have a great time with a group of fellow golfers, and we've got our top 25 instructors that are going to be there to help tune up your game. So want to have a lot of fun. Guys, thank you as always for doing a great job on the Coach's Corner panel, and give each of you just a quick moment to let the listeners know where they can reach out. John and then Jim, go ahead.
Sure. Thanks again, Ted, for the opportunity. As always, are very much appreciated. Jim, looking forward to seeing you here. It's a wonderful place. Everybody, you need to come here. I am here through October serving as their director of instruction at Macklemore. You can reach me very simply. Just look for John Hughes, put an ampersand, a hashtag, anything in front or back, and you can find me. Very easy to get a hold of me. I do have some availability while I'm here at Macklemore. If you're looking to see me in Orlando, I've got limited availability during the summer. It can certainly put you in a spot somewhere. And again, Ted, thanks as always for the opportunity.
My pleasure. Jim, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, John. It's great to be on the show with you, and I'm very much looking forward to the school there in about a month at Macklemore, and for having me. And you can reach me at jim@endicottgolf.com, jim@endicottgolf.com. And thanks again, guys. It's Perfect. Been a great pleasure.
Perfect. Thank you, guys, again, for doing a great job. And I look forward to seeing you guys in just a little under a month's time at Macklemore. It's going to be a lot of fun. Have a great weekend, guys, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ted.
Good night.
All right, that was John Hughes and Jim Endicott joining me on the Coach's Corner panel. Before we start the travel segment, I'm going to do a quick commercial break from one of our sponsors, Victory Gear.
In the world of golf, every swing, every step, and every stance counts. But what if you could enhance your game and reduce pain while keeping your legs fresher? The answer? One simple change to your gear. Introducing Victory's Carbon Fiber Insoles, the revolutionary performance insoles designed specifically to help athletes reach their full potential. Using patented carbon fiber technology, VKs do more than support your feet. They lower the impact on your joints while improving your stability, letting you hit the links more often with less pain. Visit victory.com, that's VKTRY.com, and use code GT20 for 20% off today. This offer is exclusive for listeners of this podcast. Again, that's victory.com, and use code GT20 for 20% off. With Victory's 90-day money-back guarantee, your only risk is that your playing partner has these insoles, and you don't.
This golf travel segment is sponsored by Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. If you are tired of researching and planning your group's golf trips, let the travel experts at Golf Breaks by PGA Tour help. Get a customized golf trip with their hassle-free service and save money with their guaranteed best prices. Right now, Golf Breaks by PGA Tour is offering up to $200 off your next golf trip, exclusive to Golf Talk Live listeners. Simply quote Golf Tips 200 online or over the phone. Terms apply. Go to golfbreaks.com to start planning your next golf trip today.
All right, and welcome to our special travel feature segment, if you will, sponsored by Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. I'm excited to have two special guests, both coincidentally from Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. Josh Post, you may recall, was on a little over a month ago. He's their marketing executive. And joining him tonight is George Crimmins, who is the sales team lead for UK and Ireland destinations. I'll tell you a little bit about each, and then we'll bring them on. First up, as I mentioned, is Josh Post, their marketing executive. He's originally from Worcester, Massachusetts, and he's been playing golf since he was about 12 years old. He's been working with Golf Breaks by PGA Tour since the fall of 2019, so about four and a half, just under 5 years. He's currently working out of the U.S. office in Charleston, South Carolina. And on a side note, he recently got his handicap down to an 8, boasting a low round of 79. So that's pretty good. That's a good score to have. And obviously, he's trying to move even further down. George, as I mentioned, is the sales team lead for UK and Ireland destinations. And he's from Windsor, England, and started playing golf when he was 18. And he's been in the golf industry for about 5 years, working with Golf Breaks by PGA Tour for just a little under 3 years of that five. And he's in also in Charleston. He's been a keen golfer, and he's gotten his pre-COVID handicap down to 5. But unfortunately, with COVID, he went back up a little bit to about a 9. So he's working on that to get that back down, I'm sure. And he currently helps with a lot of the long-haul team and primarily sending North American golfers over to UK and Ireland to play some of the best courses in the world. So please welcome to the special travel segment, Josh Post and George Crimmins. Good evening, guys, and welcome.
Hey, Ted. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys. And I'm glad, Josh, I know you were scheduled to be on a couple of, I guess, the other week. And we had some technical issues, so as you can tell, we're back on air, so I'm excited about that. So I'm going to start with you real quick, Josh, and then I'm going to get George to pipe in with some things. Give us just a sort of a brief overview of Golf Breaks by PGA Tour, just so that the listeners maybe tuning in for the first time have a little bit better understanding of who you guys are.
Yeah, absolutely. So Golf Breaks by PGA Tour, we're a travel agency specializing in golf trips. So our agency will basically help you plan, book your trips for you. So we got partnerships at major resorts, golf courses all across the U.S., Caribbean, and U.K. and Ireland that we partner with and can save you time with planning these trips and save you money. Due to our great partnership. So our company's based out of the UK since 1998, and we've been in the US for about 7 years, 2015, looking to continue to grow and help North Americans plan and book their golf trips.
And who doesn't like, George, working on a bucket list of places to play? And a lot of people have, especially newcomers, but a lot of people have the UK and Ireland destinations in their sights as one of their, components of their bucket list. So talk about that. You've obviously had a lot of experience in golf and particularly in the travel side of things. What is some of the, premier places that people look for most that you've worked with? What are they looking to accomplish? What are they looking to add to their bucket list?
Yeah, thanks for having me on here, Ted. I mean, UK and Ireland, I could be potentially biased, but I really do think some spots is best places to play golf in the world. It's so unique. The Lynx courses, they're just natural beauties. They're really, apart from the golf course itself, everything else around it is just completely natural. The golf course itself is cut through dunes. It's just, again, I say a once-in-a-lifetime experience, but we often find clients don't just do it once in a lifetime. They keep going back and back for more. In terms of places, I mean, kind of the elephant in the room is, St. Andrews and obviously the home of golf is arguably the most popular golf destination out there. However, obviously, with the old course in particular, it's also the hardest tee time to get. So very limited. So, in that area, you just absolutely spoilt for choice. You've got, open championship venues, Carnoustie. You've got tour-level venues, Kings Barns. They're hosting the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship, which is I was about to say a European tour. It's a DP World Tour sanctioned event there, hosted on the old course, Kings Barnes and Carnoustie. So those three absolutely amazing golf courses. You've got Dumbarney, just an hour away, Glen Eagles, host of Ryder Cup. So again, just that area itself is probably the most concentrated area for absolute bucket list golf. And just not from a golfing standpoint, just things to do in the area and just being in the area and stepping in the history of, you know, the founders of the game and that whole St. Andrews itself is just built for golf. Everyone there is there for the same reason. And it's one big, I wouldn't say party, but it's, you know, it's one big golf party, you could almost say. So that's probably, I'd say, the most popular destination and the most requested.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it is one big party and a lot of people. And you know, it's interesting too, George, as I think you'd probably agree with this. I don't think, you know, we all have seen the Open many years, especially for those of us that have been around for a while. I've seen many championships there, won and lost at St. Andrews. But I don't think watching it on TV really does it justice. I think you have to really get over there and experience it because it's not just the golf course, but there's just so much around to see and just to really take in the experience. So having said that, for golfers that have never been there before, what do you recommend golfers, what do you encourage them to do to be ready for a trip like this?
Well, first thing I'd recommend, particularly people here in North America, is to start walking your local golf course, because every single or the vast majority of links golf courses out there are walking only. So, you know, a week of golf, you know, playing every day can be taxing on the legs. So that's probably the first thing I recommend people to start walking their local course in preparation. But, yeah, you're right. The TV really doesn't do it justice. And to be honest with you, it in a way, it's almost an off-put, because it feels like now every year for the Open Championship, it seems to rain, which is the stereotype. But I can assure you, you can get some really good days there in Scotland and Ireland and England, for that matter. And, you know, I've had clients go in April, which is notoriously, you know, not the best month, and I've had a week of absolute sunshine. So I won't say it's a myth about the bad weather, but I would certainly say it's a lot better than you probably think.
And yeah, I mean, people obviously have to do a little, I think it pays to do a little research. I think you guys would probably agree, Josh, wouldn't you agree that this is something that Golf Breaks by PGA Tour can certainly help with when you get in touch with somebody there and they're not familiar with it. You guys can kind of give them a little bit of an idea of some things that they might want to make sure that they prepare for, not just obviously as George talked about, getting out and starting to walk your golf course and getting a little bit of, I won't say sea legs, but fairway legs maybe is a better way to put it. But there's other things too to get ready, is maybe understanding, because for guys that have never played there before are going to have to make some adjustments to their game, correct? Because it's a different type of golf course we see here in the United States, and that's for Josh.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and that's a good thing about, you know, booking a trip over to UK or Ireland with us is our agents have the inside knowledge, can steer you in the right direction when it comes to the courses and the hotels, and kind of give you, again, that inside knowledge that you would have to do that research for. And most of them have actually been on trips over to Scotland and Ireland in past years. So they've seen the golf courses in the area firsthand. So they can certainly recount their experience, as well as, you know, provide, you know, a detailed itinerary of kind of what you should do during the trip. But, yeah, I mean, when it comes to tailoring your game, you know, I play a pretty high ball flight, so I certainly would not be one for the wind up in the UK and Ireland. So, you watching Tiger try and hit some stingers on YouTube is what I would definitely try and research before I go.
George, what are your thoughts on that? Obviously, some adjustments is different, more of a link style course, very open. Not. I'm sure you don't see too many tree lined fairways compared to what you see over here in the United States. So again, you're going to have a much different experience. So you need to play a little bit differently than what you typically might do here, correct?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you know, Josh hit the nail on the head there with, you know, keeping your ball flight low. You know, that's probably your first obstacle. The fairways are a lot wider, so there is a little bit more room for spraying the ball around a little bit, which suits, you know, a golfer like me. But when you do get in the rough, it can be very penalizing. Rough is very high, very punishing. So it is key, keep it on the fairways, and then you will be using your flat stick a lot more than you probably would on a Parkland style course. You'll be, you know, I've seen people putt from 50, 60 yards out. It's to deal with the undulations and just the way the
right.
greens are laid out and even the fringes and even the fairway to an extent. You'll be putting a lot more than chipping, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I think it's probably a good idea for those that are maybe working with a golf professional here to, you know, give them a heads up, and not the week before, but maybe a month or so before, and say, hey, I'm heading over to Europe, you know, going to be playing the UK, Ireland area, or whatever the case is. I need to prepare myself to make sure I'm hitting shots that are going to be appropriate over there. So that might be something to suggest to them as well, is to get them to start boning up on a different type of play than what they're usually used to. George and Josh, feel free to jump in as well if you want to add to this. But George, what are some other things that the folks might want to do while they're there? Obviously, they're there to play golf, and they're going to try to get as much golf in as they can. But there's a lot of other things to do and see there as well. What are some options that they can do?
Yeah, I mean, plenty to do off the golf course. I mean, first of all, both Scotland and Ireland are both famous for drink. So plenty to do, plenty to drink. You're never really more than a stone's throw away from a pub wherever you are in
right.
Scotland and Ireland. So, you know, that's first thing first. in Scotland, I'll touch on Scotland, then I'll touch on Ireland real quick afterwards. Obviously, in Scotland, major city, Edinburgh, about an hour and 10 minutes from St. Andrews, that is where the likelihood is, probably a 95% chance that you will be flying into. So I always recommend spending a day or two in the Edinburgh area. It's an absolutely beautiful city. I actually think it's the nicest city in the UK. Just so much history, you know, castles and just so many things to do and see. You've got the Scottish Highlands if you want some more natural beauty. You know, mountains, lakes, and you know, just so much to do there. And then in Ireland, similar thing. I mean, the southwest of Ireland, I didn't touch on that one when we talk about kind of the bucket list areas, but it doesn't get much more bucket list than the southwest of Ireland, with, you know, six of the top 100 golf courses in the world. And obviously you've got Adair Manor as well, that's hosting the Ryder Cup in 2027. So that side of the country as well, absolutely phenomenal. And then again, natural beauty. You've got the Cliffs of Moher right there. You've got the Ring of Kerry, just so much natural beauty. And the Irish will go above and beyond from a hospitality perspective. They love having people and showing people and showing off their beautiful country.
Yeah, it's a whole different experience, right? Because again, the pitchers, I mean, we've seen a lot of great books over the years, golf books written, featuring some incredible photography from the areas, and it's certainly breathtaking. But it's a whole different thing to have your feet planted on soil, looking at some of these things that George just mentioned. What are your thoughts here? I mean, you obviously, I'm sure, would agree with what he just said, but anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, no, absolutely. George is 100% right. Everything that he's mentioned there, you know, as someone who's only seen it in pictures and magazines and books, you know, it's certainly a bucket list place, even for me. But yeah, I mean, no matter where you go, you know, there's more than, you know, the destinations everywhere, the entire country of Ireland, from the southwest to Dublin to the northwest, Wild Atlantic Way, and even the Highlands of Scotland. If you're not going to St. Andrews or Edinburgh, there's just so much to see wherever you're going to go. So it's, you know, it's certainly worth the 7 or 10 day trip to take a day or two to just see what else is out there, especially for someone like myself who's never been over there before.
And let me ask you just a follow-up with you, Josh, and then George, I'm going to let you give some final thoughts as well. Obviously, Golf Breaks by PGA Tour can custom fit the perfect trip, really all budget levels. And what's interesting is it's actually a lot more inexpensive than what people might think to go over there. Can you touch a little bit, Josh, if you wouldn't mind, just a minute or two, about how you guys can really help customize a trip really for all levels of player, but all levels of budgets as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when you come to Golf Breaks by PGA Tour, all of our itineraries are customized, you know, are customizable. Even if you want to go for two nights and one round, obviously for a domestic trip, but excuse me, for, you know, for anything overseas, you know, we have a wide variety of hotels, B&Bs, golf courses, resorts that we work with. You know, the company was started in the UK, so our relationships with the venues over in the UK and Ireland are probably the strongest that we have. So we have so many options to customize a trip, perfect for a group, which is just, you know, exactly what you're looking for, especially when you want to make it a special bucket list trip of doing things that you want to do and playing courses that you want to play and getting the full experience that you can get.
And just to add to that, are you guys also, through your partnerships that you have overseas, you know, we touched on a little bit, George did, about some of the different sightseeing that can be done. Are you guys able to assist in coordinating any potential tours and things while they're there? So when they finish playing golf, if they want to take part in maybe a tour that goes to some of these different places, you guys can help them with that as well, or at least point them in the right direction, correct?
Yes, we can certainly make recommendations. I know that we have booked tours previously. I've been kind of out of the long-haul space, so George might be able to answer better. But the other thing I will add is, especially with a trip to the UK and Ireland, where you're not going to be stationed in one hotel or place for the whole stay, is transportation for the whole group to drive you around as well, which I'll let George touch on.
Yeah, George, if you wouldn't mind just touching on that a little bit,
perfect,
so people have a better understanding of, how sort of things work.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, in terms of, you know, if you want to do sightseeing before or after the trip, I mean, we can highly recommend some places, but what a lot of our groups actually tend to do is they'll hire transportation, obviously through us here at Golf Breaks. We work with some really great transportation companies in both, you know, Ireland and Scotland, and they can really take you anywhere. A lot of groups that come back say it's the best thing about their trip is their driver. They basically have a designated driver for the duration of their trip, and that driver will take them wherever they want to go throughout the day, sort of no limits really, and so they're not just limited to golf and you know, transfers to the airport. They can go and sightsee and they can go and see everything they want to do in their trip. They can do through these drivers, and the drivers recommend so many places for people that they don't even think of, and you know, maybe that you haven't heard of that the locals have. So the drivers are something that we really push, and you know, I haven't had one person come back yet that regretted having a driver on their trip. It really is, in some cases, the best part of group trips.
Yeah, and there's you know, some great food and obviously drink, as you mentioned, to be enjoyed over there. And you know, if you're going to go on a trip like this, you want to really experience something different than typically what you would have here. And that's what makes it, I think, enjoyable for so many people. And that's why it becomes and has been so popular for so many years. Josh, as we wrap up here, do you want to give them information on where they can go to get more information about some of these trips? What's the website?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's Golf Breaks by PGA Tours, the name of our company. And we can be found at golfbreaks.com. That's golfbreaks.com. And then if they want to call in and speak to an agent directly, the main line telephone number 844-676-4653.
Perfect. George, any final thoughts or comments you'd like to make before we wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, I would just encourage, you know, anyone that's seen it on TV that wants to just get a taste of you know, golf overseas and particularly, you know, in the UK and Ireland, is give us a call. Even if it's just in the exploratory stage of your planning, give us a call. We'll run through, you know, you'll speak to a team of our long-haul experts here who will guide you in the right direction and give you recommendations. And, you know, depending on the information you give us, we will then recommend and put together the best possible itinerary for you. So, you know, we really do believe that, you know, speaking to someone on the phone and you know, taking all that information will really ultimately give you the best possible trip on the back end there. And I just would highly recommend it. And one more thing just to add as well is I would always advise planning these trips at least 12 months out. Sounds crazy, but you try and get a tee time right now this year for some of those courses we touched on earlier, you've got no chance. So for the best availability, we would highly recommend booking at least 12 months in advance.
Yeah, it's definitely it's one of those, again, it's a bucket list that you want to gather, and these guys are the ones to do it. Go to golfbreaks.com and just reach out to all of the contact information there, and you can reach out to guys like George and as you get ready to book that ultimate trip to the UK or Ireland. Guys, thank you very much again for joining me. I appreciate it on a special travel segment on Golf Talk Live. It's been a pleasure, and I will continue to encourage people to reach out to you guys and book their next buddy trip, whether it's overseas or even here in the United States. There's a lot of great locations. You guys have a lot of great packages put together, so we'll give them that information again at the end of the show. But thanks, guys, for joining me tonight on the special travel segment here on Golf Talk Live.
Thanks, Ted.
Thanks, Ted.
All right, that was Josh Post and George Crimmins, both with Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to be back with tonight's special guest.
The following ad is sponsored by Golf Tips Magazine.
Are you tired of being short off the tee? And what about those three putts? Forget about it. It's time you got serious about your game. Golf Tips, the most in-depth magazine in the industry. For over 30 years, Golf Tips has delivered expert content such as the latest golf instruction from America's top pros, simple-to-follow practice and game improvement drills, fitness and mental game tips, equipment, training aids, accessory and apparel reviews, golf destinations and travel tips for every budget, and so much more. Don't miss a single issue. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back to Golf Talk Live, and I'm very excited to have tonight's featured guest, John Dioulas. He is the president of golftrainingaids.com. Over his 30-year career, he has been right at home in the leisure and luxury travel business, specializing in cruise line travel sales and marketing. He's a gifted businessman and entrepreneur, and who is also a lifelong avid golfer, and he became the president of golftrainingaids.com in the spring of 2021 with his eyes on scaling up the business that Dr. Gary Wyron founded in the early 80s. John and his team have embarked on a precision effort to carry Dr. Gary's legacy in the future as technology and innovation in the game improvement space continue to expand at a rapid pace. So please welcome my very special guest tonight, the president of golftrainingaids.com, John Dioulas. John, how are you this evening?
Good, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing very well. We obviously both made it home from the PGA show in January.
Yeah, we did. Another great show.
Yeah, it was good. I think, you know, obviously post-COVID, we've been sort of easing back into a regular routine, and I was very impressed with how everything went, and I was happy to stop by your booth and get a good look-see at some of the products that you guys have. So give us just a little bit of just an overview. I mean, most people I think that have been around or in golf, you know, for any length of time have certainly are familiar with golftrainingaids.com. Just kind of give us an overview of that company.
Before I do that, I want to elaborate on your previous guest about planning well in advance. I go on one or two golf trips every year, and this year we're going to Scotland for the first time. I've been to Ireland a couple times, and most likely we're not going to be able to play the old course because we planned this thing inside 12 months and everything's booked. So what he said at the end about planning well in advance is very, very, very true. So
yeah.
So I'm looking forward
you're
to
right,
Scotland.
No.
But I may go all the way over there and not be able to play the old course, which would be unfortunate. So but hopefully we'll be able to make it happen.
Well, I hope
yeah,
so as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we started the company about 3 years ago. I was, as you mentioned in the introduction, I was in the travel business for a long period of time, and you know, unfortunately COVID hit and it was time for me to make a career change. My business partner and I decided to get into an e-commerce business, and we stumbled upon an opportunity to purchase the company that Gary Wyron founded. In fact, ironically, we're talking on the 40th anniversary of GolfTrainingAids.com. Now, it started as Golf Around the World, but we are celebrating our 40 years in business as of the beginning of this month.
Wow. Well, that's fantastic. You know, it's interesting because, you know, there are so many, and we're going to talk about a few. I'm going to let you talk about some of the recent product releases that you guys have come out and are coming out in just a little bit. But when people really need to dial in and work on their game, there's a lot of great training aids that many of the coaches and you guys have really, I guess, over your time. I mean, you've developed an incredible online presence, you know, developing a lot of groundbreaking new training devices that have come out into the market, and you've developed a lot of great relationships with instructors. How important is their feedback to what you do? And I'm talking about the instructors. Obviously, your customers, you want to get good feedback from them, but you also want to get feedback from the instructors as well, because they're the ones a lot of times that may be using it as a teaching device or tool and or promoting it to their students. So talk a little bit about some of the relationships that you guys have developed and also how important that relationship has become.
Oh, it's critical. I mean, we you know, in order to get better at your game, you know, I don't know about you, but I've taken lessons over my golf career. You know, I grew up raising a son who played a lot of competitive golf as a junior. And he had an instructor for the 5 or 6 years that he competed as a junior. It's really, really important. And we partnered with a gentleman over in the UK who was on the Golf Channel, created a product called the Sure Set, and just a really, really innovative, entrepreneurial, really understands the golf swing, a gentleman by the name of Dan Frost from Sure Golf, who I think you met at the PGA show.
Yes, yes I did. Yeah, great guy.
You know, as an amateur golfer, you think you know what is right and what's wrong, but at the end of the day, I think it's really, really important to get golf instructors who understand golf swing to create product that will fix and provide solutions to golfers who want to improve their game.
Well said. And I think something, and I see this as the editor of Golf Tips Magazine. You know, I get approached all the time by people that created a new product or what have you. They want reviews done and so on and so forth. And as I'm sure you get approached by, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs that have developed a what they believe to be the next greatest training aid. Do you take a look at a lot of stuff every year? And if so, how do you decide? And is this where you rely on some of the instructors to pitch in to say, hey, this is something we think we can really, you know, grasp onto, or, You know, it's okay, but we don't think it's really going to be something for us. Is that something that you find yourself having to do a lot of really looking at things with a serious eye before you bring it into your product line?
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard because a lot of teaching professionals have ideas.
Right.
And
that's why I said that, John.
Well, it's funny because, well, I shouldn't say it's funny, but it's ironic. I had an exchange today with a gentleman in Australia who has a product that is very creative, but I'm not sure it fits within our space. So we get inquiries weekly of products that have been created to fix certain things, and some of them are really good, but at the end of the day, you have to make the determination whether or not you can manufacture it efficiently, and is there a market where amateur golfers and teaching professionals, is it a product that they will purchase? And we've had to turn away a lot of products that I didn't think would make the cut, and have been fortunate to have been able to partner with some inventors where the product has really resonated. So a perfect example of that is the Divicord, which is it's still our top selling product, and we've owned the business now for 2.5 years. The inventor of the Divicord came to us first and presented us with this product and said, "I think this can work." And it was one of those things where I'd like to say I'm an expert, but I'm really not. It's an intuition you have after seeing so many different products on what can work and what won't. And the Divicord was one of those that you just knew right away that this is the product that was going to really resonate with amateur golfers.
And I think too, John, one of the sort of balancing acts that you have to find is, again, obviously is how is it going to be produced efficiently and economically, because obviously you have to sell it, and you can't have something that's so exorbitantly expensive that people are just, hey, it's just too much. But at the same time, you want to make sure that it offers an ease of use. One of the biggest things one of my pet peeves with a lot of training aids and devices that have been out over the years is if it's too complex, if it's not user-friendly. In other words, if people struggle understanding the concept behind it. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff. I mean, I'm sure you see thousands of things every year, down at the PGA show, everybody and their brothers coming out with something new. And you obviously can't, produce it all. But at the same time, you don't want it to be a product that people are going to, it's just going to collect dust in the garage. You want people out there using it. But at the same time, you want it to be effective. Am I correct?
Yes. We don't play in the game of producing gimmicks. I'm not going to say that there's a ton of those in our business, but we've taken the approach that we want to provide solution-based products where if we're going to sell something, it solves a problem, and it's something that is easy to use. And it's funny, your previous question about getting inquiries all the time, the gentleman who sent me something from Australia is a perfect example of what you're just talking about. He sent me his product, and he has sold a decent amount in Australia. And I opened the box, and there were no instructions. It wasn't intuitive. So as a golfer, I mean, one of the keys is you have to be able to take it out of the box, and not that you need to know immediately exactly how to use it, but it's got to be easy to understand. And a lot of the times these products are way too technical, require
yeah.
too much instruction, and that's not what the amateur golfer wants. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, what you're trying to do is create products for the 15, 20 handicapper who is going to open something and immediately understand how it's going to help them. It can't be overly complex and too technical.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And that's what I'm saying is to have an ease of use. And again, obviously people have to work with the aid and get familiar with the process. But I think what would ultimately happen, it's the same thing with technology. I mean, we see this in the business with technology where, you know, it's great. It looks fantastic. It gives a lot of great information. But if people get too caught up in the numbers or get too caught up in the technology and they're not really focusing on what needs to be done for game improvement, then all of that is for naught. And unfortunately, in our industry, many of the instructors, not all of them, but many of the instructors for a while got really excited and jazzed up about the technology and, you know, focused on solely the numbers to the point where a lot of students said, you know, wait a minute, you know, my eyes are rolling in the back of my head like a slot machine. I don't understand. And so I think you have to find something that is, again, has a certain ease of use and understanding, but also gets results. Because if people are not getting results, then they're just going to throw it away, or they're going to, you know, it'll be sold on eBay or something at a later date. So you want them to. So obviously that goes back to what I was saying is you guys really have to look at these things. And that's not to say everyone's going to be a winner, but you, for the majority of it, you want to make sure that whatever you're bringing into, you know, onto golftrainingaids.com has really been looked at very carefully and assessed, and you've made a decision. Hey, we feel this is a product that's going to help get you to where you need to be. Right.
Yeah, and look, there's room for highly technical products for those teaching professionals or scratch golfers that really do pay attention to the numbers. But the vast
sure.
majority of amateur golfers, that's not what this is about. This is about something simple where they can shave a couple of strokes off their game, make it more enjoyable, and something that is going to easily translate when they go back out to the golf course after trying something for a little while. It really improves their game. Something simple. And by the way, those are the best products. I mean, you know, I mentioned the divot board before. It's a really intuitive, immediate feedback. You know, people understand where your low point is supposed to be, where your swing path is supposed to be, and it's a product that is really easy to use and easy to understand. That's why it's so successful.
And something you guys did last year, I mean, obviously you had it available before, but you really have started ramping it up in 2023, and that was you started on golftrainingaids.com. You began featuring a lot of instructional how-to video content that is obviously designed to help golfers with game improvement solutions and so forth. And obviously you allow them the opportunity to sign up for weekly emails, which gives them that, you know, video input tip right into their inbox. So how important of a shift for you guys has that become? Are you seeing that it's really helped a lot of people getting that information, that sort of how to really help with their game improvement?
Yeah, so we started doing a tip of the week, and we've encouraged all the teaching pros that are in our database to provide us with video content on simple swing tips, whether it's full swing, chipping, putting, providing us with video content so that we can share with our customers. It's not really a sales pitch. It's more of a here's something you should try or here's something you should look at. And, and not surprisingly, it's our highest viewed email. So we, you know, we email throughout the week, and the one that is not promotional and is more informational and providing golf tips is the most popular email that we send out to our customers.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think people. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, and by the way, we encourage anybody who's a teacher to reach out to us and share video. At the end of the day, we love to share that kind of content with our customers. So we're always looking for teaching pros to provide us with video content because again, at the end of the day, that's what amateur golfers want, right? They want to visualize how they can improve their game and not be sold to every single day.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. And you know, people that you know, when you ask the average, especially high handicap golfer, the number one thing they want to do is you know, there's multiple things, but you know, they want to learn how to hit it further. They want to get more distance. They want to get more accuracy. But ultimately, it's to give them more fun and enjoyment in the game. And I think the simpler you can make it and more accessible you can make it for people. And today's society, too, one of the things is time management. People don't have as much time to just sort of lounge around and do whatever. They're busy. They're doing other things. Some people can't even, you know, don't even have the time to play a 4 or 5 round hour round of golf anymore. They're cutting that back, you know, the frequency. So they want to get their information as you know, instant, if you will. You know, that old saying, instant gratification. So when they are able to see that and have that information, and it's not just, like you said, a sales pitch, it's showing them, it's demonstrating certain techniques, it's demonstrating maybe a product, but showing how it can better their overall game, that's something of value to them, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you started by saying, you know, the high handicapper wants to hit it further. It still baffles me. And I've been in the business for almost 3 years, that's what everybody wants. Yet 40% of your strokes are putting. And by the way, we have the best, I think we have the best putting aid in the business, in the putting arc. But you're right. People want to be able to find products that are going to help them hit it further, hit it straighter, fix their slice, become a better chipper, or, you know, have fewer putts during a round of golf.
Well, the truth of the matter is, and I think this is, you know, as an instructor myself, this is one of the things that I've learned over the years, unfortunately, and it has gotten worse, and this is something that we combat all the time, is with very heavy-driven marketing for many years, I throw blame where I feel it's due, but many of the manufacturers, of course, that pushed it started back with the Big Bertha and all that. And I'm not trying to pick on anybody, but, you know, it was kind of made sexy to belt that thing. You know, had guys like John Daly come on and just, you know, launch the thing. And then, of course, some of the other guys have come along afterwards. And it became a very appealing thing and really driven, let's get more distance. But you're right. I mean, the majority of strokes lost are within a few yards of the green or on the green. And, you know, it's very difficult and challenging as for a lot of instructors to get people to focus on the areas that they're going to save the most. I mean, I know lots of guys that can hit it, you know, 200 plus yards in the middle of the fairway, but they can't, you know, chip and putt worth beans, and they wonder why they're still struggling to break 100 or even 90. And it's because their short game is just terrible. But all they want to do is when they come to the lesson tee is, Ted, how can I hit it, you know, an extra 50 yards or 30 yards or 20 yards or whatever. They don't care about the other. So it's a matter of educating them of what's really going to help them. And I think this is something that you guys are really trying to focus on as well, right?
Yeah, I wish we could convince people to spend more time working on their short game. I think it was the story that Tiger Woods, his father, taught him the game by playing 100 yards and in first, right? That's what you need to master. Yep. Is in yards. And, you know, that's where if you're going to become a better golfer, it's reducing the number of putts, being able to get up and down around the greens. But that's not what's sexy, and that's not what sells, unfortunately.
Right.
You know, people are always wanting to buy. You know, I just played in our member guest, and the gift that most of the members and guests
used as part of the event was the Pioneer Driver. And it seems like that's the first thing that everybody goes to try to become better golfers, to hit it further and get the new driver. But at the end of the day, it's really about being more efficient around the greens, chipping better, putting better. I mean, I will tell you, and I'm in the business, the product the most with, I mean, it's not even close, it's the putting arc. It's in my office.
Yep.
I take 15-minute breaks where I just practice my stroke. And, you know, look, there's a reason why most PGA professionals, or a very large percentage of them, have used the putting arc as a training aid to help them with their putting. I mean, I use it all the time.
No doubt. Yeah, no doubt. And I agree with you. I remember just a couple of years ago down – sort of in my neck of the woods, the LPGA has their, you know, Q series, and they were playing in Alabama. So it was just a, you know, sort of a hop over the border for me. And I went and watched some of the morning practice, and it was amazing how many of these young ladies, and I actually saw a few of the putting arcs on the green that they were working with. But what was interesting was they were using a lot of training aids, and they were using, you know, all kinds of things. And not saying that they weren't on the range hitting golf balls, but they were spending more of their time working on the short game. And, you know, people can argue and say, well, you know, yeah, but they can hit it flush and so forth, but they were working on their short game. You know, and I interview on my other program on Tuesday mornings, a lot of the winners from the Epson Tour, and they all talk about it. Some of them can, you know, they'll hit it 250 yards, which is certainly nothing to sneeze at. But it's their short game that they're all dialing in on, right? It's, you know, certainly they'd like to get some extra distance, but it's their short game. Let's talk about some of the products that have been released or coming out. You've got a few of them here that we can talk about. The Power Shift Board, talk about that.
So it's, you know, the game is, here I am, I'm talking, trying to push the short game, and now I'm going to jump into a product that we created for to generate more power. Look, if you look at a lot of the top players in the world, you know, the new thing now is using the ground as leverage to create power. And there is definitely a way to do that efficiently. And it's transferring your weight and using the ground as leverage, and which is why we created this Power Shift Board. And it was a conversation I have, again, with Dan Frost, who's the renowned teaching professional over in the UK. He and I had a couple of discussions about, you know, how do we do this and what's a way to create it. There's other products out there that you know, don't really promote the right things. And we put a lot of effort into this. And one of the differences in our product versus others is there's an audible component. So, you know, when you're in the transition, which is the thing that most golfers, myself included, struggle with, is that transition at the right time and the right way. And what the Power Shift Board does is it provides you immediate feedback on when that transfer of weight happens. From, if you're a right-handed golfer going from your right side to your left side, you hear that clicking noise. That allows you to know when you're doing it properly.
Yeah, and that's important. That's my point, too. I was saying earlier, you know, there's a lot of great training aids out there, but there's a lot also, too, that don't really give you any sort of feedback, or certainly not feedback that most people can use. So, you know, if there's something, whether it's audible or it's a visual cue, something that gives you a tangible feedback so that you know if you're doing things right. And I remember that's what Dan demonstrated when I was down there at the PGA show. That was the product that that he was showing. And you know, obviously it's noisy on the floor, but you know, he was able to articulate enough that I obviously understood what he was talking about. But yeah, it's a great product. You've got some other ones here too that we can touch on too. The connector. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, the connector is so popular that we don't have any more. So we're waiting.
All right.
we're waiting to restock that. We should have a full stock of inventory of the connector the first week in June. Great product. This is one that that Dan and his team created. Again, there are other products out there, but what makes this better is he put a material together that was a memory foam that allowed you to be able to use it and customize it to your swing, your body type. It also has an alignment rod in so that it allows you to focus on your alignments, where you're focusing, and then also an arc that comes out of both sides of the ball that allows you to focus on your swing path as well. So it's a great product, one of our top sellers, so much so that we ran out in late March and had to reorder. So for all of your listeners who want that, it'll be available first week in June.
Fantastic. Well, that's a good thing. It's good to run out in some ways. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
The orders are coming. So that's a good problem to have is when you run out. Another one, too, and I remember Dan showing and demonstrating this one, was the draw board. That was another one I thought was really interesting because that's something there. It's multifaceted, really, in what it does, but touch on that a little bit, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes, we were very fortunate to be able to go to the Masters, not this past year, but the year before, and we were standing on 13, and, you know, he and I were talking, and he said, you know, the most amateur golfers can't hit a draw. Everybody hits either a fade or a slice. And, you know, if they got to practice on lies like 13 at Augusta, they'd be able to hit a draw. And we both looked at each other and said, you know what? That's an idea for a training product. So we created this product that really accentuates a draw. So there are wedges that come with the product so that you can, graduate from having a lot of assistance to force you to hit a draw, to eventually it becomes a flat mat with a swing path, a draw swing path that allows you to practice hitting a draw. And it definitely works. We have a national sales director who's based in Seattle who is nothing but a fade. And he came in, and we wanted to shoot some video, and he goes, I can't hit a draw. And I said, well, we're going to see if this tool really works. And sure enough, after 30 minutes, 45 minutes of him practicing on this, he was shaping a draw shot with ease. So it's a product that helps you visualize and feel the sensation of hitting a draw.
Yeah, and that's something that a lot of people struggle with. I mean, you know, I would say the majority, certainly a big majority of golfers either fade or even slice the golf ball in comparison to the number of people that draw. So understanding and helping that reinforce. And just on a side note to the listeners out there, I know we're talking about a lot of things. You're saying, well, I can't see it, so I'm not sure what we're talking about. We're going to give you the website here in just a little bit. And I want you, I strongly encourage you to go and visit golftrainingaid.com in a few moments. We're going to be wrapping up here shortly. But visit the website, and you can see a lot of the different products, not just the ones that we've been touching a few on here tonight, but all of the products. I mean, there's just a ton of different products for various different needs. Many of them have been recognized by a lot of the top publications like Golf Digest. And the next one that we're going to touch on here is the Tour Feel Swing Trainer. That was Golf Digest recognized that as a top product at the PGA Show this past year. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's incredible. I will tell you, I've been fortunate to have been connected with Dan, and Dan's created a lot of great things. And when he first brought
the prototype to, he flew over here and shared some things, and initially takes this thing out of the bag, and I'm like, I have no idea what this is. And then when he put it on and started to demonstrate it, I was like, this is, this makes so much sense. And the beauty of this product is you can hit balls with it. So it's a product that you there's a holster. Again, I'm a right-handed golfer, so I'm speaking in terms of a right-handed golfer. there's a harness that straps on your left shoulder, and what it does is it promotes width in the backswing, which is again a problem that most amateur golfers have. They don't create enough width. It feels uncomfortable, but this really forces it. And one of the things he did is he traffic lighted it. So there's a green, yellow, red position on the tour field so that you can ease into the right width for your golf swing. And, he's partnered with Eduardo Molinari over on the European tour. And for those of you listening who don't know a lot about Eduardo is a very technical golfer, certified engineer. And this is a product that he has fell in love with. And if you look at some of the video, if you see us on social or even on our website, you'll see a lot of the demonstrations of the product in use with Eduardo using it. It's a great product, and I use it a lot. While you can hit balls with it, I have it in my workout area, so I will put it on and just practice and get the sensation of making sure I have the right width in the takeaway.
And that's, what we're really talking about here is when you get that feedback, and obviously effective feedback on whatever product it is that you're using here, and you're able to grasp and understand better happening or not happening in your golf swing, that's really what you want. And it's, I think what makes training aids so great is because of that feedback, because a lot of times people, you can tell them as an instructor, you can explain everything 1,000 times, but until they actually see it and feel it, a lot of them struggle. Now, some people, again, maybe a very technical person, you can just describe certain things and they can see it in their mind, but others need to sort of get that visual feedback or certainly feel that feedback. And this is what a lot of the products that I see, or have seen on your website really do, is they ingrain proper technique and give you a feedback to let you know what the ultimate result is going to be. That's why I liked when Dan, talked about, the draw board at the show. When you first look at it, you're thinking, okay, I get it. But I can understand how somebody that really struggles with that after using it for a very short period of time is going to start ingraining, their body is going to retrain and start hitting that nice little draw. And you get people that have never been able to do that for years, and you can talk to them until you're blue in the face as an instructor. Until they get that sort of visual feedback, it's very difficult sometimes for them to really understand. Don't you agree?
Absolutely, and I would tell you specifically with the draw board, it works, and the tour field, it works. It's about getting that feedback, and Dan's a big proponent of learning through sensation, not information. If I've heard him say it once, I've heard him say it 100 times, but it's very true. I mean, you don't want to have to think. The golf swing happens so quickly that if you have to think about it, you're not going to be successful. So you have to practice the things that are going to give you the sensation of doing it the right way, and then through repetition, you'll be able to take that onto the golf course. I know it's that way for me.
And that, pros. I mean, they're not just swinging at it once. They're working. They're always working on something. Even the best players in the world are constantly working on their game. And that's unfortunately what a lot of amateurs just don't get, is they don't realize that you have, you know, I said this earlier in the show tonight. I said you get out of your game what you put into it. So if you're not willing to work on these things, but the thing that you have to be careful of is you have to make sure that when you're practicing these different things, that you're doing it, one, with purpose, but you're also doing it correctly. Because you can do all the practice you want, but if it's not correct, then all you're doing is ingraining bad habits. So this is where a good training aid and understanding, and that's why I said to you at the very beginning when I asked you, you know, when you're looking at some of these training aids, do you really kind of do a deep dive, not just how it looks, but how it performs and the feedback that you're getting? Is it something that the average golfer is going to be able to be receptive or understand? Because if it's not, if it's confusing or complicated to them, then the frustration level goes up and they're just going to shove it aside. So that's something obviously that you guys really have to look at, right?
Yeah. You know, in my business, we get to talk to a lot of teaching professionals and PGA Tour professionals, their coaches. And one of the things that you know, you don't see this on TV as an amateur golfer who enjoys golf, watches golf, what you don't see is their practice routine. And a very celebrated, very high-level teaching professional who's teached a lot of the great players told me that you know, when you go watch these guys practice, they're all using these products. They're using training aids to get better. There's a reason why these things are made. And if it's good enough for a PGA Tour professional, it's certainly good enough for a 15 handicap golfer.
Yep. No, I couldn't agree more. And this is something, and again, it goes back to, you know, there's a lot of products that come out. We've seen a lot of products over the years. There's a lot of great ones. There's some that are pretty good, and there's some that just sort of miss the mark. And this is why it's important. And what you guys do really well is you guys put together not only products that you guys have developed and designed yourselves, but you bring into the golftrainingaids.com fold, is you make sure that you're really, again, doing that deep dive to make sure that these are the best products available to come to market, because your, you know, your reputation obviously is well earned for being able to do that, and you have to, because again, you want people using it, you want them to get better and improve using those tools, because you know they're going to talk about it, and you know when their buddies are saying, well, hey, you know, Bob, how did you get that nice draw on there? Well, I used the draw board. Where'd you get that? Golftrainingaids.com. So you know. Right, that's your best marketer right there. I mean, you can put all the videos you want, right? But
yeah, the other thing I found is not every training aid's for every golfer. And
sure,
you know, I use myself personally. There are a couple of products that I use religiously because they work for me. I spoke earlier about the putting arc, right? That is something that I can close my eyes and practice my stroke, and I'm a pretty good putter. So it works for me. The other product, which we haven't talked about, is the swing plate, which ironically was also created by someone over in the UK, a guy named Jamie Britton. It's a great product for me. It works on my swing plane. I have a problem with coming over the top. And, you know, this is a product that whenever I feel like I get out of sorts, I go to the range early, I bring it with me, and you know, it only takes me 15 or 20 minutes to recalibrate, but that's a product that works for me.
Yeah. And there's so much, I mean, you guys have got so many, I mean, we'd be here for a couple more hours, going through all the different products. So that's why I say, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give everybody again, that website, it's golftrainingaids.com. We're going to wrap up the show here in just a moment. I want you guys, when the show is over, I want you to go to their website, check it out. They've got some great deals going on there as well, some really good products. And if you're looking to improve your overall game, really do your research. Don't just grab the first thing at hand. Look for it. Discover if you've been working with a golf coach. I'm sure they've pointed out a number of areas of your game that you're struggling with. Have a conversation with them and saying, hey, I'd like to really help this area of my game and find a product that GolfTrainingAce.com has in their repertoire that's going to help isolate and identify some of those issues and help you work them through it. So stuff there, John, and you guys have just done a great thing. And also, if you want to see some great weekly video tips that these guys are putting up on their website at GolfTrainingAce.com, you can sign up for their weekly emails. You can do that right from their website as well. John, I want to thank you very, very much for coming on the show tonight. It's been a pleasure, and
I look forward.
Hopefully, we'll be able to connect before next year's PGA show. I think there's some things that we can work on together. I know we talked a little bit at the show, but I think we'll be in touch again real soon. And I think there's some things that we can partner up with and help one another. But you guys have some great products and a great business, and I want to thank you for taking time and sharing that with my audience.
Yeah, thank you for having me. If you're ever in this area in South Florida, please let me know. I'd love to tee it up with you if you ever want to play. I want to put one little plug in. One of the things that we've done, and this is something I'm very passionate about, we've created training aids for juniors. I'm working with Dan Frost over in the UK, who's created a brand called Chasing Majors. And I think we are the first organization to really dedicate resources to manufacturing training aids that are specifically made for junior golfers. I have a junior golfer who's highly ranked in the world, actually, at our club, and he uses a lot of the junior training aids that we've put together. So for all of you who have junior golfers, check out our Chasing Major brand, Chasing Major brand on golftrainingaids.com.
Lots of great stuff here. I mean, there's many, many other things, and we'll have to save that for another show, but a lot of great accessories, a lot of great products, every part of the swing, whether it's the full swing, the short game, indoor, outdoor, putting, you name it, they got it. Junior golf as well. Let's start them young. Let's get them out there on the golf course and let them get it working on their games correctly. So, again, golftrainingaids.com is the website. Visit there. Reach out to John and his group if you have questions, and get out there and sign up for their weekly emails as well to get those video tips coming into your inbox. So, John, again, thank you very much for coming on tonight in Golf Talk Live. It's a pleasure, and we'll be in touch real soon.
Thanks, Ted. I appreciate you having me.
Not a problem.
Bye now.
All right, have a good night.
You too.
All right, that was John Dioulas from GolfTrainingAids.com joining me on as my special featured guest tonight on Golf Talk Live. And again, I'm very glad to be back on air. As I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast, we had a little bit of mishap with the programming the last week or so, but seems to be aired out. A quick one last thing that I want to do before I close off the program. Again, I can't emphasize enough, we're getting close to the deadline, but if you're interested in attending the Golf Tips Magazine's Golf School up at Macklemore in Georgia, it's just about 2 hours north, I think northwestish of Atlanta. Reach out to me at editor@golftipsmag.com. That's editor@golftipsmag.com. Need to get out to me as soon as possible. Reach out and I'll give you all the details and let's get you signed up and getting out there. As I mentioned, the guys in the Coach's Corner panel, John Hughes and Jim Endicott, are going to be there. The dates are June 7th to the 9th. It's going to be 3-day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Some great golf you're going to play, some great instruction, and just some beautiful views. So make sure you come out and join us. Editor@golftipsmag.com is the email to reach out to me. And I look forward and hope you can join us in just a little under a month's time. On that note, I want to thank all of my special guests this evening. Have a great weekend, everybody. And I'll see you next time right here on Golf Talk Live. God bless, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this week's broadcast of Golf Talk Live. We'd like to thank this week's Coach's Corner panel and a special thank you to tonight's guest. Remember to join Ted every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Central on Golf Talk Live. And be sure to follow Ted on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you're interested in being a guest on Golf Talk Live, send Ted an email at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.